At 11 o'clock on the 11th of November 1918, the armistice was signed. It brought to an end the First World War. In total, 20 million people died in the war. And, of course, the end of the war brought not only great rejoicing, but also a real determination that never again would such a horrific war be fought. But, of course, only 20 years later, the world was at war again. In the Second World War, 72 million people died. I guess that the main focus for many this Remembrance Sunday will be those two wars. But since the end of World War II, there have been over 250 major wars fought around the world, in which more than 50 million people have died. And in Afghanistan, in Syria, in Israel, Palestine, in Congo, it is still going on today. And even when there is no war, it's reckoned that the early 1990s was the period where the globe was closest to peace that it's been. And even then, world expenditure on armaments was running at just under £1 million a minute. Why? Why is the world like this? Why are we in such a mess? On Sunday mornings, we're studying Paul's letter to the Romans. And it was about 3 weeks ago that we saw the fundamental answer to that question. Because in Romans 1, it tells us that because people have ignored God and are determined to go their own way, that chilling little phrase, God gave them over. It's as though God has said to humanity, if you want to live apart from me, that is a choice that I have to allow you to make. I will let you live apart from me. But the consequences have been utterly disastrous because humanity was not created to live detached from God. Of course, not everybody is particularly bad. There are plenty of good, moral, respectable people around. But we saw last time that even though they might not do particularly bad things, they might do some quite good things, they aren't perfect. Because you can be good and moral and still have a heart that is pretty well self-centered and doing those things for what you get out of it. But what about us? What about us here in church this morning? Well, Paul hasn't quite finished his analysis of what's wrong with the world. And his next section is, I think, the most uncomfortable of the lot because it might hit quite close to home. So let's turn now to Romans chapter 2, and Edna is going to come and read for us.
This morning's reading is taken from Romans chapter 2, verse 17 through to 3:8, and it can be found on page 1129 of your pew Bibles. The Jews and the Law. Now you, if you call yourself a Jew, if you rely on the law and boast in God, if you know his will and approve of his superior, know of his will and approve of what is superior because you are instructed by the law. If you are convinced that you are a guide for the blind, a light for those who are in the dark, an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of little children, because you have in the law the embodiment of knowledge and truth. You then, who teach others, do you not teach yourself? You who preach against stealing, do you steal? You who say that people should not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You who abhor idols, do you rob temples? You who boast in the law, do you dishonor God by breaking the law? As it is written, God's name is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you. Circumcision has value if you observe the law, but if you break the law, you have become as though you are not circumcised. So then, if those who are not circumcised keep the law's requirements, will they not be regarded as though they were circumcised? The one who is not circumcised physically and yet obeys the law will condemn you who, even though you have the written code and circumcision, are a lawbreaker. A person is not a Jew who is one only outwardly, nor is circumcision merely outward and physical. No, a person is a Jew who is one inwardly, and circumcision is circumcision of the heart by the Spirit, not by the written code. Such a person's praise is not from other people, but from God. What advantage, then, is there in being a Jew? Or what value is there in circumcision? Much in every way. First of all, the Jews have been entrusted with the very words of God. What if some were unfaithful? Will their unfaithfulness nullify God's faithfulness? Not at all. Let God be true, and every human being a liar. As it is written, so that you may be proved right when you speak and prevail when you judge. But if our unrighteousness brings out God's righteousness more clearly, what shall we say? That God is unjust in bringing his wrath on us? I am using a human argument. Certainly not. If that were so, how could God judge the world? Someone might argue, if my falsehood enhances God's truthfulness and so increases his glory, why am I still condemned as a sinner? Why not say, as some slanderously claim, that we say, let us do evil and good may result. Their condemnation is just. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you, Edna. I suspect that for most of us, our response to all that was, what's that all about? It sounds so remote from us, doesn't it? If you call yourself a Jew, which of course we don't. That stuff about being circumcised, what's it got to do with us? And it'd be quite easy then just to say, okay, let's just switch off. But before you do switch off, let's just look a bit more closely. Paul started off by focusing on irreligious pagans, and he found that they fall short of what they should be. Then he turned to morally respectable people, and he found just the same of them. And now Paul is turning his spotlight on devout religious people. The sort of people he describes in verses 17 to 20 there. Now you, if you call yourself a Jew, if you rely on the law and boast in God, if you know his will and approve of what is superior because you're instructed by the law, if you're convinced that you're a guide for the blind, a light for those who are in the dark, an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of little children, because you had in the law the embodiment of knowledge and truth. Just pause for a moment. And reset that, replacing the word Jew with devout churchgoer. Now, if you call yourself a good churchgoer, you put great store in being part of the church. You've read the Bible from cover to cover, so you know what God wants from people, and that means that you're pretty good at telling other people how they should be behaving. After all, there are so many people around who obviously don't know right from wrong, but you do. And you're happy to tell them. I think that could actually describe quite a lot of people in our society. Could describe plenty of people in Morton. Maybe even people in church today. I think it's important that Paul certainly isn't saying that there's something wrong with all of this. It is a good thing to be a faithful churchgoer. It is good to have a secure faith in God. It is great to know what the Bible teaches and to put it into practice. So what's the problem? It is too little words. Now, if you call yourself a Jew, if you rely on the law and boast in God. You see, if being part of the church and studying the Bible and all of that is something that flows from a living relationship with Jesus, it is absolutely fabulous. But if you think that those things give you a relationship with Jesus, if you rely on those things, you've completely missed the point. And it might sound strange, but actually it is possible to put your faith in Christianity rather than putting your faith in Christ. But it's not a religious system which can save you. It is Jesus who can save you. So how do you know if you are one of these people who's kind of putting your faith in the things you do rather than in Jesus? Well, that's what Paul goes on to, actually. You then, who teach others, do you not teach yourself? You who preach against stealing, do you steal? You who say that people should not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You who abhor idols, do you rob temples? And of course, the answer to all those questions, which is already forming in your minds, is no, of course I don't do any of those things. Or do you? For example, have you ever noticed that when you're reading the Bible, you come across something and it really seems to speak about something that somebody else is doing in their life? And you kind of think, oh, I really must go and share this verse with them so they can see where they're going wrong. Or, probably even more likely, you hear something in a sermon and your first thought is, I hope so-and-so's listening to this. This is what they really need to hear. Isn't it true? It is so much easier to see someone else's faults than to see your own. It is so much easier to point out somebody else's faults than to have your own pointed out to you. You then who teach others, do you not teach yourself? But of course, we would not steal, would we? Interestingly, back in the Old Testament book of Malachi, God condemns his people for stealing from him. And they say, what? How are we robbing you, God? And God replies that it's because they're not giving to him what they should be giving. You see, stealing doesn't just involve taking what is somebody else's. It can involve not giving what someone else, especially God, is entitled to. And on that basis, you who preach against stealing, do you steal? But we have to draw a line here, don't we? When it comes to adultery, you certainly can't accuse me of that. But of course Jesus said, you've heard it said, you shall not commit adultery. But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. You who say that people should not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? But I have certainly never robbed a temple. This one's a bit more obscure. But I don't think that Paul is necessarily speaking literally. What is it that you would rob from a temple? Well, obviously an idol. So you reject worshipping idols, but subtly you take an idol for yourself. You take something in your heart. It might be money. It might be your job or a hobby or a relationship. It could be your own pleasure and comfort. And you end up building your life on them. They become the false gods which claim your heart. You who abhor idols, do you rob temples? You who boast in the law, do you dishonor God by breaking the law? Of course, there are times when those who appear to be good, godly people do get caught with their fingers in the till, or are found to be having an affair, or have committed some abuse, when there is an obvious failure to practice what they preach. And when that happens, as it's written, God's name is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you. And I guess we'll have heard people say it. They call themselves a Christian, but if the Christians act like that, I don't want to have anything to do with it. But even if it isn't so obvious, I'm afraid hypocrisy has a habit of showing up. Because the thing is, what really matters, what drives your life, is your heart. All these things that Paul talks about are what's going on inside. On the outside, you can be a thoroughly respectable churchgoer. While what's going on inside gives the lie to that. You see, it is just so important. Religious observance is not what God is interested in. In fact, religious observance can be a barrier to actually knowing God. That's what all this stuff about circumcision is all about here. For the Jews, circumcision was a sign that you were part of the community. You were part of God's people. And then, of course, as one of God's people, in response to that, you were to live it out, to live faithfully as one of God's people. Two sides of the coin. But it seems that the Jews have started thinking, actually, if I've been circumcised, I'm okay. Everything's fine. And they started not worrying too much about their behavior. And Paul had to say, no, that has never been God's purpose. If you've been circumcised but then live ignoring God, actually your circumcision is meaningless. And although it's not an exact parallel, it is a bit like people who think that because they've been baptized, they are part of God's family and accepted by God. But it isn't like that. There are other people who think that because they're church members and worship regularly, they are part of God's family. And what Paul is saying here, I'm afraid, is, so what if you've been baptized? So what if you're a church member? Those external things cannot save you. Those things only matter if they are accompanied by a changed heart. It's what's inside that's important. Circumcision has value if you observe the law, but if you break the law, you've become as though you had not been circumcised. You see, on its own, baptism or church membership or any other external thing cannot protect your heart from sinning. All it can try to do is to hide the sin. None of those things can get rid of selfishness or envy or anger or pride. And so a person is not a Jew who is one only outwardly, nor is circumcision merely outward and physical. No, a person is a Jew who is one inwardly. Or in our context, a person isn't a Christian just because they've been baptized, or just because they're a church member, or just because they take communion. No, a person is a Christian when something has changed inside them, in their heart. That doesn't mean that these things are unimportant. What advantage then is there to being a Jew? Or what value is there in circumcision? Much in every way. Or in our context, it is great to have been baptized. It is wonderful to be part of a Bible teaching church. Even though so many people reject the gospel, God is faithful. He is endlessly faithful. In fact, our unrighteousness brings out God's righteousness more clearly. The thing Paul's warning us about is, you can do all those external things and still not be a Christian. Why is the world like it is? So full of violence and war. Why is this broken world so full of broken relationships and addictions and neuroses? Paul has a simple answer. It is because people have turned their backs on God. And so they're reaping the consequences of living their lives alienated from God. It's true of people who ignore God completely and think they're free to live however they want. It is true of good moral people who think they can live fully moral lives without needing Jesus. And it is even true of faithful church-going people who think that being a faithful churchgoer is what matters. It's true of people who rely on those things. And it's true of all those people because none of those things, doing what you want or thinking that you're morally above others or being a faithful churchgoer, none of those can do the one thing we desperately need. We need to have our hearts changed. Morality or churchgoing can't change your heart. Nothing you do can change your heart. There is only one way that your heart can be changed, and that's Jesus. Circumcision is a circumcision of the heart, by the Spirit, not by the written code. No, nothing external can change your heart. So you see, it is only when you admit your need of Jesus, when you admit that you can't fix yourself and you need him to do it, it's only then that your heart can change. And the really painful and uncomfortable conclusion, which Paul forces on us by the end of Romans 2, is that unless you have done that, unless you have turned in repentance and faith to Jesus and asked him to fix your heart and then to rule your life, unless you have done that, no matter what you might think of yourself, when you look at the brokenness of the world, I'm afraid you are part of the problem. Because it is only through Jesus, that you can be part of the solution.